You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenzo. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. We've got a solid show lined up for you this afternoon. Warren Sharp's going to step up and in and break down some NFL games. Nobody does it better than Warren Sharp. We're going to straight to the strip in Las Vegas, Nevada. Teddy Covers will join us from Ted Sportsbook and Casino. And people are actually asking me at our road rage the other night if Ted Sportsbook and Casino is a real place. And I'm like, well, it's a real place, but you can't go there. So it is a real place, and it isn't a real place. But what's real is that Ted Savransky is going to join us on the program today. He bats leadoff, batting second on the program today. One of my favorite National Hockey League players of all time. Played back in a day when there was passion. Rod Stewart-sized passion in the game. Jeremy Roenick will join us on the show. If you're going to talk hockey, you might as well do it with JR, right? If you go by JR, you're a cool dude. I was thinking about that when we got Roenick coming on. I'm thinking about, like, who are the other JRs? Who are the other, like, JRs? You got JR Richard, the baseball pitcher. He was a badass with the Houston Astros. You got the WWE Jim Ross, JR. He's a badass. You got JR from the TV show Dallas. He's a badass. And we got Jeremy Roenick. Like, there's not one dude named JR that's not a badass. Like, that's why our cameraman's name's Art JR. Couldn't resist. All right, we got a football game tonight, I guess. Is it a football game? More like a scrimmage, but is it a scrimmage? Hey, don't look now, man. The Rams have actually beaten the Seahawks the last three straight times that they have played, although they're not beating them tonight. It's the biggest point spread of the year. And we have a lot of biggest everything of the year this weekend. Here's a fantasy note for you guys, and I just scooped the Green Bay Packer defense taking on the Chicago Bears. Could be the coldest game in the history of the National Football League. Where did Matt Barkley play college ball? Where's Matt Barkley from? Oh, yeah, California. Yeah, I'm sure Matt Barkley's going to do great in this game. I like the points with the Packers, but that's besides the point. So, yeah, we got a lot of stuff to get to on the show today, as you can tell. So without further ado, let's start off with a program in the same fashion that we started off the program a couple of times this week, talking about holiday traditions. You know, Christmas is around the corner. I'm not really sure when Hanukkah starts, but maybe it started. It's like 8 or 9 days or something like that. Either way, it's the holiday season. And, you know, we all have our traditions, getting too drunk at office parties, racking up debt, traveling long distances to see in-laws or family relatives that you really don't like or want to spend any time with, missing big football games because you're sitting around listening to an uncle babble on about his job. And, you know, my own personal favorite holiday tradition is sitting alone, watching the Hawaiian Bowl. Like, that's my deal. Christmas Eve, and, you know, it's like good news, bad news. It kind of sucks because most of the people that I love in my life are dead. But the good news is I don't have to go see them at Christmas. Like, although I enjoyed going to see them at Christmas, and I realized that, like, a couple of years ago, and as I get older, I'm like, well, I really got nowhere to go. So looks like it's just me, my degenerate compulsive gambling habit and ESPN tonight. The Hawaii Bowl is on TV. Love that Christmas Eve tradition of the Hawaii Bowl. Used to be on Christmas Day, but now the NBA has taken over Christmas Day, which leads us into our new holiday tradition. This tradition, though, kind of sucks. And this tradition... this tradition didn't usually rear its ugly head until Easter time or so. And I'm talking about paying top dollar to go to an NBA game only to find out that the superstar players aren't playing. Now, am I missing something here? We're not even 25 games in yet. We're not even at Christmas yet. Like, the NBA season doesn't really technically, unofficially sort of start until Christmas Day. You know, we're less than 25 games in, and you're resting players? Like, seriously? You know, I expect when people pay $18 to go see that new Jennifer Lawrence movie, that you'll actually be in the movie. Well, you know what? Yeah, I'm sorry everyone paid $18 to see Jennifer Lawrence in this new space film that looks like every other piece of crap space film. What's the plot? Oh, they go to space and the pod broke off and they got lost up there. You want a space movie? Watch Jason Jason, he gets frozen 400 years into the future. He unthaws and starts chopping people's heads off. That's a freaking space movie. Anyways, so you got Jennifer Lawrence. She'll actually be in a movie. You know, when you went to see Goodfellas, Robert De Niro was in the movie. Well, Robert De Niro decided to stay home tonight. You know, it's good for the kid that paid $800 to go see LeBron last night. You know, there's some other poor kid. Hey, LeBron, thanks for ruining my Christmas. His Christmas present was going to see LeBron James. You know, not only did LeBron James not play, not only was he not in the arena, he wasn't even in the damn state. Like, LeBron couldn't travel, evidently. You know, we all accept, and I love the NBA, they're great athletes, but we all accept that they rip us off more than any other professional athlete out there. They try the least, they quit the fastest. We already accept this. We know this, and we still love their league. But now, they just start kicking sand in our face. Less than a quarter through the season, players are resting already. Hey, figure it out, man. Either you start like finding teams like millions of dollars for doing this crap, or here's a novel concept, come up with a schedule that actually freaking works for everybody, because this isn't working right now. It's a complete scam, man. It's a complete scam. What was LeBron James? Oh, he's tired. That's what you're getting hundreds of millions of dollars for, dude. I'm tired right now. I haven't missed a show in 15 years unless I've been suspended or missed a damn plane, and it's your fault, Air Canada. But I suck it up and get it done, because I'm not even paid top dollar, but I still do it because that's my freaking job. That's your job, LeBron, to entertain little Timmy. You ruined his Christmas. You ruined little Timmy's Christmas. You couldn't even bother show up, do a couple of dunks before the game starts. Reminds me when I covered the Montreal Expos. You know, they went to Puerto Rico for like a month. They bitched and moaned, oh, we're on the road. We got to play in Puerto Rico and we got to go on the road. They got back to the airport to like a hero's welcome. Oh, we're so tired. We got a game tomorrow. I got to go home and get some rest. You know where they went? They went to Wanda Strip Club. How do I know? Because I was at Wanda Strip Club and I was there with them until 4 a.m. getting wasted. All right. So next time a professional athlete tells you that he needs some rest, you know what I say? I say the same thing to the sports books that took our money all those Wake Forest losses. Give us our damn money back. Game Time Decisions continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. All right, man, that was some like who ruined your Sunday type of rage right there. I wasn't really expecting that, but like I said, like, well, you know, they came up with a new collective bargaining agreement last night in the NBA. I guess part of that was screwing the fans over. So it's like, you know, just figure it out. Don't do so many back-to-back games and this won't happen. Or I was going to say, you know, you bet you want to rest the guy, rest him at home, but then you're just screwing your home fans. Don't rest people unless they're incarcerated or hospitalized, all right? Don't rest people. We asked when Hanukkah starts. Evidently, Hanukkah starts on Christmas Eve, which I got to tell you, I would have lost a lot of money on that bet. Like, I always thought it was like from the 16th until like Christmas or something like that. But I think it's roving. I think it's roving. So it starts at different times. A lot of people think I'm Jewish. A lot of people think I'm Greek. A lot of people think I'm Italian. I'm just one of those dudes that, people think I'm them. But I will say that I do celebrate the Jewish Christmas tradition. And I know we've got a lot of Jewish people working in the building. Our boy A-Rap and our boy Feinberg from yesteryear. And I was unaware of this because it is true. The only thing that's really open on Christmas Eve is Chinese food. And like I said earlier, I often spend Christmas Eve alone just to decompress before I do some of the family things. And I'm watching the Hawaii Bowl eating Chinese food. So, you know what? I guess I'm honorary Jewish and I'm honorary degenerate gambler. And by God, they should make me the ambassador to the Hawaii Bowl. I love that bowl. Let's bring Ted Savransky in right now. What's up, Teddy?
Marancy, how are you today, dude? Yes, Hanukkah is a roving holiday. It changes from year to year. But if you're going to be a true Jew, you know, it's not just Chinese food. You got to watch a movie. You got to go out to the movies.
Yeah, you go to the theater, too. So it's Chinese food and a night out with the family to the theater, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's the Jewish Christmas. It's been that way for 100 years.
You know, it's funny. My boy John Lerner, right, who's my agent in Jersey, because, you know, he's of the Jewish faith. And I remember it's been 2 years in a row. I said, yeah, eating Chinese food, watching football. And he's like, oh, yeah, it's the Jewish Christmas.
It's tradition.
It is tradition. I like when the Hawaii Bowl was Christmas night, though, Teddy. I'm old school. Remember the old blue-gray game in the morning?
Real early.
Oh, that game, too. You were a degenerate if you were betting on that one, the blue-gray game from Mobile, Alabama. I'll never forget, Teddy. We'll get to the games. But I realized I had a gambling problem. It was many, many years ago. Shaquille O'Neal and Jordan were still in the league. It was one of those, like, you know, NBC Christmas Days blue-gray game. And I called a bookie, like a local bookie in Montreal, at like 11 in the morning, Christmas morning, to get action in on the blue-gray game that was kicking off at noon. And in the background, I could hear daddy, daddy, and I could hear the presents being opened and stuff. I was like, gotcha, had a bad time? He's like, no, what do you need? What do you need? He goes, just be quick. I'm like, yeah, blue-gray, you have 500 on gray, 500 on the Orlando Magic. Then after I realized, I was like, man, I just called a guy at his house Christmas morning to bet on the blue-gray game.
Though, I mean, for as funny as a blue-gray game sounds to be betting on, you know, Malinsky has always found edges in those type of games. And when Malinsky had a recommendation, I was all in on the type of blue-gray game stuff or Pro Bowls, things that I've never tried to handicap. You know, your friend and mine has been pretty good at those type of events.
So have I, Teddy. I'm good at the obscure and the stupid. Like, I often...
Clearly, you got me on as a guest.
Exactly. Well, look, you're the king of the Arena League. I've always been good at the Arena League. You know, CFL, Arena League, Olympic sports, stuff I know nothing about, generally. But nevertheless. So, you know, funny, Ted, we're on story night, but a great story from a degenerate gambler. Gambler calls the bookie on Monday, bets Monday Night Football, loses. Calls Tuesday night, bets NBA, loses. Calls Wednesday night, bets on the NHL and loses. Calls the bookie on Thursday night. Bookie says, all I have on the board tonight is WNBA. He goes, why am I going to bet on that? I don't know anything about that.
Exactly.
It's all the same, right? So tonight, Teddy, largest point spread of the year tonight, sitting at 16 right now.
Yeah, and I mean, understandably so. When you look at what has happened to the LA Rams over the course of the last couple of weeks, you have the Jeff Fisher firing, obviously, and not Jeff Fisher firing with a full week to prepare. It's a Jeff Fisher firing, and the special teams coordinator all of a sudden becomes the head coach. He's never been a head coach. He's never put together a game plan. He doesn't know a whole lot about coaching the offense. And of course, they're going up against a Seahawks team that got embarrassed last week. It's a Rams squad that, I mean, you look at the numbers over the last couple weeks, they got outscored 65-3 over the last 3 weeks in the first three quarters, the last 2 weeks. And then, you know, 21-3, they've outscored their opponents in the fourth quarter, making the final scores look less bad than the games actually were. It's been ineptitude on both sides of the football for LA. Well, ineptitude on the offensive side of the football, because the defense, even last week against Atlanta, you had Goff throwing a pick six, you had Goff with a fumble six. Defense shut down the Falcons. They had a pass rush on Matt Ryan. The Falcons running game, they were able to put a pass rush on. It wasn't like Atlanta moved the ball up and down the field against them. And when you look at not just one meeting, every recent meeting between the Rams and the Seahawks, including the one played back in LA in September, Seattle's offense hasn't worked in any of those games. The Rams, I mean, the defensive line is a unit of dominance. The Seahawks' offensive line is a unit of weakness.
Yeah.
You put those two factors together, and it becomes a problem in my mind for Seattle covering this type of a number.
It's a big number, short week. Generally, the home team's done well in this spot in the short weeks on Thursdays. 10-1 straight up, 7-4 against the spread, last 11 Thursday nighters. But, Teddy, I get the feeling that the players in the L.A. Ram locker room like Fisher about as much as Snoop Dogg and Eric Dickerson like Fisher. And, you know, you get that boost sometimes, right? The coach is gone and, you know, guys are in the room and it's like, all right, maybe some one of the guy leaders in the room says, all right, man, we all didn't like Fisher. Well, it ain't on Fish right now because he ain't here. It's on us. But it's a short week, tough spot. Like you said, you know, I guess, hey, Fossil's father was a coach. If that helped.
Well, I mean, the question is, have you seen anything that illustrates that the Rams have that type of leadership in their locker room. No. I haven't seen anything from the Rams that say, all right, hey, we're going to circle the wagons right here. Hey, we're going to play one for our department.
That's what makes this interesting, Teddy, because on the other side, it's not like the Seahawks have really shown us anything, that they're capable of blowing somebody out right now, or that they even need to. This isn't college football. There's no rankings. There's no polls. They want to get the damn win.
Exactly. And, you know, when you look at what happened last week for Seattle with, whether they have six turnovers in Green Bay, riddled with mistakes. The Aaron Rodgers had a QB rating of 150.8 last week. That's the highest QB rating of any opposing quarterback against the Seahawks defense since Pete Carroll got there back in 2010. So this is a defense that's really good, that's facing a weak opponent at night, on the road with a limited game plan, and Seattle's D has something to prove. So, you know, I don't know. The Seahawks are going to score points in bunches on offense. I don't think the Rams are going to score points in bunches in any way. Slight lean towards the under, but of course the markets are already there. And in a game where there's a legit shot for special teams touchdowns, defensive touchdowns, crazy plays, that under, it's just a lean. It's not getting into my pocket.
As you just referenced, Teddy, no quarterback is playing better in the National Football League right now than Aaron Rodgers is. He said, we're going to run the table, get on my shoulders, and let's do this thing. And they've been doing it. They have a favorable situation this week, Teddy, going to Chicago. It's going to be cold at Lambeau, real cold, 0 degrees, 14 mile per hour winds. And in fact, to put it in Canadian terms for everyone on the metric system still, Fahrenheit, Celsius, it's minus 18, guys, plus a wind chill. And in fact, I just saw, Teddy, that it's projected. It might be the coldest game in NFL history, actually.
It's going to be cold. We know that. And we talk about wind as being the primary problem for good pass games. Green Bay's not a running team. Okay, they're not the type of squad that's going to line up and pound you at the line of scrimmage and run the ball down your throat. It's not that type of year for the Packers. We haven't seen that out of Green Bay at any stage of this season. They are a finesse offense. They have to throw the football downfield. So when you talk about, you saw 14 mile an hour, I was seeing wind gusts in the 20s and a steady wind in the 15 to 20 range with temperatures near zero at kickoff, and it's only going to get colder. Those are not ideal passing conditions for Aaron Rodgers. And remember the lousy weather game at Soldier Field on Thanksgiving last year, where Rodgers had the four shots from the 5-yard line to win it at the end, and he couldn't complete any of those passes, and Green Bay's offense struggled throughout? I'm concerned here about the Packers laying this type of price in these conditions, especially coming off the huge win like the one they just had, and especially with, let's be honest, the Bears have been competitive. They've been not, they're priced as bottom feeders. They play decent football in back-to-back weeks. You know, I'm not in a hurry to step in front of Green Bay, but there's no value here laying this price with the Packers. Not in these conditions.
Raiders and Chargers, Teddy. Raiders laying 3. San Diego was a trendy pick last week with a lot of sharps, Teddy, going into Carolina. That game basically was over after the national anthem was over. Phillip Rivers' homecoming and all that stuff didn't work out, but the Chargers have a knack of bouncing back. It's a rivalry game here, but I've been to Raider-Charger games in San Diego before, and it's going to be essentially a Raiders home game in this spot. Do you think the Raiders bounce back, or the Chargers play this to the wire because it's such a rivalry game?
Well, how much do the Chargers have left in the tank? Again, another 2 key starters go down with injuries last week at Carolina. That's 8 starters down for San Diego now. I think we have 18 different players on injured reserve. It's a mess, and Gurley's hurt now as well.
Gordon.
Gordon's hurt. I'm sorry. Yeah, Gordon's hurt as well. He's not likely to suit up this week. So it's a San Diego team that's had a disappointing season. Their coach is probably not going to be back. They're coming off a really miserable turnover plague loss, and they're riddled with injuries. I do not trust the Chargers to bring their A game this week. And here's Oakland with a little bit of extra time to prepare, coming off the debacle at Kansas City. This is a Raiders team that was in position to earn the number 1 seed in the AFC just last week. And instead, they lose to Kansas City. Now they're sitting at the 5 seed. They got to go on the road for the postseason in week 1. Oakland hasn't been playing these type of meaningful games in December in years past. And that's my biggest concern with the Raiders here. But you put these two teams together on paper, and the only case I can make is towards a road favorite, not towards the home underdog.
And Ted Savransky has a play on the Las Vegas Bowl that's going on in his backyard, an intriguing matchup, San Diego State and Houston. We encourage you to check out sportsmemo.com. And also, Teddy's one of the cover's experts. But before we get you out of here, Teddy, one of the games that's intriguing to me, and it seems like all the mainstream prediction and previews I read for the Bulls, it's not simple that UCF are playing in Orlando, so they're going to win the game, Teddy. Right?
Come on,
like, that easy. And, like, they never mind the fact that, it's not the best Arkansas State team. They're 0-4. They went 7-1 in their last 8.
Yeah, and it was all defense for Arkansas State. I mean, the Red Wolves do not have a potent offense by any stretch of the imagination. What they were able to do over their last 8 games, 7-1 straight up, 6-1-1 against the number, 7-1 to the under. They relied on that defense. They allowed 15 points per game down the stretch of the campaign after that very ugly start. And if they're going to hang around in this game, they're going to have to do the same thing. This game's going to come down to two good defenses. We talked about Scott Frost bringing the Oregon of the East to UCF, and that never happened this year. The offense never got going. A bunch of players that were recruited for a very different system didn't necessarily fit into that Oregon of the East, Justin Holman, the QB. example number one in that regard. They only gained 362 yards per game. So it's not like it's a dynamic UCF offense that's been blowing teams, marching up and down the field. Why are the Knights here? Because their defense has been really good. So both teams' strength is on the defensive side of the football. Total reflects that 49.5, but I'm still looking under in this one. I do not see these two offenses marching up and down the field throughout.
Ted Savransky, prepared for the bowl season that's rapidly approaching. Starts Saturday, guys. Check out Teddy online. Check out his daily videos on YouTube, SBR.com. SportsBit is the name of the video. Covers experts in sports memo. Always a pleasure, Teddy.
Pleasure's mine, Gabe. Best of luck. Enjoy the weekend.
Ted Savransky, Teddy. Always a pleasure breaking it down with Teddy. And it's always cool kicking it with Jeremy Roenick, who joins us next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues, as does our theme of having legendary athletes and performers who should be in the Hall of Fame, who aren't yet, actually. But I assume that Mr. Jeremy Roenick will soon get inducted into the Hall of Fame. You know how they are. They like to make people wait. Ooh, they like to play God and all that other stuff. But I got to tell you, man, 513 goals, 703 assists, 1,463 penalty minutes, played hard at both ends of the rink, understood the code of the game, and nobody played harder than NBC Sports analyst Jeremy Roenick, who joins us right now. JR, it's always a pleasure, my man. How you doing?
I'm wonderful. Thanks for the introduction. I hope you're right. I hope you're right, but I'm patient.
Yeah, is that the deal? I guess you have to sort of understand that, right? If you haven't been eligible that long, but, how do you get the butterflies that, when that time of the year comes around?
I don't know if it's butterflies. I think I just, like I said, you know the saying, all good things come to those who wait. So, it's a very, very tough boys club to be in, not boys club anymore, just club period to be in. It's a special honor. And like I said, I'm patient. I hope it happens one day. I think my stats and my career speak for itself. And hopefully one day they think that too.
What was your take on Eric finally getting into the Hall of Fame?
Eric was such a big part of the National Hockey League and its growth. One of the best players that has played, and unfortunately, due to concussions and injuries, his career was cut short. But if you look at his points per game, you look at the impact that he had in Philly, you look at the impact he had in the salary rise of the National Hockey League, he really pretty much he kicked everything into high speed when he came in and got probably one of the biggest contracts in rookie history. So, I think you know, good for Eric. He's a good guy, and he meant a lot, and I'm glad to see he's in there.
Jeremy, I hate to admit it, man, but as I get older, I'm sort of turning into the Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino. Like, I used to wonder, why is the old man across the street so angry when I was playing ball hockey and the ball would hit his garage? Now I get it. Yeah, I'm like, I'm just that guy. And I talked to guys, and I was in a sports bar the other night, and I was going to the UFC, and a Canadian, we're in Toronto, and a dude says to me, I can't watch this hockey anymore, man. They're all pansies. They're not bringing it like the old guys used to. And he actually, you know, your name came up, Shane Corson, Darcy Tucker, Doug Gilmore, Mark Messier, etc. And these guys are so skilled today. It's amazing the hand-eye coordination that they have. But to me, Jeremy, there's a little bit of passion missing. And, you know, I don't know if it's been taken out of the players, because I don't say these guys are, they don't have passion. But to me, there's just something missing, a little bit of intensity missing, the desire to win that you guys showed on a nightly freaking basis.
Well, I think there's a lot to be said. I mean, my answer could, I can go on for 15 minutes about this topic. And I do believe that the game in the late 80s, early 90s was such a physical, hard-nosed, in-your-face, fighting for your job, fighting for respect and the respect of the game and the respect of the players and each other were so much more prominent than it is now. And you know, it's all society. All society nowadays, kids are, yeah, are they're not as strong-willed. They're not as motivated. They don't have the social skills. That, you know, whatever the case may be. You know, what they call them, the millennials. I just think, you know, in this day and age where everybody needs a participation trophy, everybody needs quiet spaces and safe zones. You know, it's a bunch of crap, and that's where our generation has come to. These generations have come to. I do believe that the hockey is as good as it's ever been, talent-wise, speed-wise. You see the guys that are playing the game right now, like this McDavid. I've never seen a guy like Connor McDavid can play it at the speed and the intensity that he does, the way that Sidney Crosby has elevated his game. So
the old school mentality, say those two. You're right.
But the old school mentality is totally gone. Okay, I mean, the league has taken away a lot of the opportunities for big hits, obviously because of the injuries and now with the concussions and people being more up to date and aware of what concussions are all about. So it's protecting the players, but still, there's a big part of the game that this is another thing that I don't, that it bothers me. When all these kids get so much money before they even play the game in the league, there's no fear in losing jobs. If they're hurt, like when we got hurt back in the late 80s, early 90s, we were fearful of missing hockey games because someone was going to come up and take our place, and if they do a good job, they're keeping that spot. And if you lose your job in the National Hockey League making, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars, $300,000-$400,000, you can't live the rest of your life in the real world. Nowadays, these kids, they don't make it, or if something happens, they have a nice little kitty
successful no matter what, right? Yeah, they're already successful no matter what.
Where's the fear of losing your job? Of missing hockey games. Like, these guys, sometimes they get hurt. They might have an injury that would keep them out one day or 2 days. But why would what's causing them to come back early and have to go through the pressure of you know, producing, the pressure of playing well, when they could just sit in the stands and milk an injury for, you know, three more days and get paid a lot of money? It's just too much too early. I truly believe in you go out there, you earn it, and once you've earned it, then you get paid what you deserve.
I want to get your take on a Carey Price situation, because, you know, I got to be honest with you. You know, I grew up in Montreal. I played in NDG. Gord Donnelly and Frank Donnelly, the Donnellys were my coaches, all right? Like, we used to brawl with teams in the parking lot after, like, you know, like old-fashioned hockey, Jeremy, right? So I got to be honest with you. When I watched the Carey Price and the Palmieri deal, I was sickened by everything. Like, almost everyone didn't do what they were supposed to do. Now, besides Carey Price.
One person did what they were supposed to do, and that's Kyle Palmieri.
Okay, so
Paul. With vengeance, and he went to the net with abandon, yeah, trying to score a goal.
Yeah.
That's
I thought Carey was out of line, actually, because, yeah, Palmieri didn't even run him. Carey was just getting pissed off. But then you got Petrie and Mark Barkov standing there doing nothing after the fact. Carey Price is taking Madsen.
It was Petrie that pushed him into Carey Price, number one.
Yeah.
Kyle Palmieri would not have hit Carey Price if his defenseman didn't push him into the goaltender, number one. Number two, I agree with you. I think he was way out of line. He didn't have to do that. But you also have to understand Carey Price's outlook on things. He's missed so many games due to injury, due to knee injuries, leg injuries. He had Chris Kreider run him a couple years ago that hurt him. So he's going to take objection to anything that happens within his crease, and he doesn't want to get hurt again.
Shouldn't his teammates take more of an exception, JR? Shouldn't his teammates take more of an exception?
Yes, no question, yes. But I'm a big Carey Price fan. I think he's the best goaltender in the world. I really do.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that. I like that fight in him. I like that battle that, hey, listen, I don't want to get hurt. I don't want you to take liberties on me. And, hey, maybe somebody one day will think twice about making that angle going to the net, because if they're going to get a blocker to the wrist about 10 times.
Yeah, it didn't look a lot of fun. I was wondering, though, what happens if Hextall's on the other end of the rink? He's Corey Schneider. Shouldn't he went down and just punched Carey Price whether he wanted to or not?
If Ron Hextall was in that game, not only would Carey Price be in trouble, but probably the all the other five guys on the ice would be in trouble. It'd be Hacksaw Williams going after him right there. Are you kidding me? Hatchet man.
You came into the league when Billy Smith was last year. Billy Smith. Did Billy ever get you ever, JR?
I came around the net one time, and that stick came wrapping around the post, hit me right on the top of the foot, and I swear to God, I thought my foot got chopped off. He got me so good one time. It was not fun.
He's like a sniper, right? You're thinking, hey, I'm just a rookie, man. What do you want you doing this to me?
I was still behind the net, and his stick hit me on top of the foot. Still behind the net.
I have to ask you about that, because everyone thinks of Hextall and Billy Smith, but Ray Emery could really throw for a goalie, huh?
He's a battler too. You know, he was a good goaltender, no question.
All right, so we always talk about I'll sound the old, hockey guys are so tough, and about basketball and these guys. But LeBron James sat last night, JR. They're not even 25 games into the damn season yet. We're not even 25 games in, and they're sitting players, man. What's your take on that? Fans paying big money to see a star athlete in a league where they market star athletes like they do, and I can't play back-to-back in a non-contact sport.
I just wonder if they gave him a bib for his pregame dinner. it's soft, man. I'll tell you, there's too many soft players in this game. But I don't know. I can't rip on LeBron. He's won some championships everywhere he's gone, and does what he does. I'm not gonna question when they want to arrest him and when they don't.
So I wanted to ask you about the Las Vegas team. Never mind their name debacle. I thought the Aces was cool, but people thought that was too cheap. But the Las Vegas Aces would have had a nice ring to it. How do you think it'll do? You live in Arizona. You played in the desert before. I've lived in Las Vegas before. There's a lot of sports fans there. It's a transient city. There's a lot of East Coasters there. Like every second dude in Vegas is from Buffalo, it seems. What's your take on the NHL going to Vegas?
It's going to be interesting. I think they have a shot of being successful. Their ticket drive and the way that they did it, they sold a tremendous amount of tickets that were non-casino buyers. So it's going to be interesting to see how many people really get excited when the games do start, how many people do come. I do think what they will capitalize on, when a lot of these opposing fans, when they go to Arizona or they go to L.A. or they go to Florida to do these teams, to follow their teams. I think a lot of people now will be doing that trip to Vegas to follow their teams. You're going to see a lot of fans from other teams that are going to be going into that arena to watch their team play on the road.
Well, that Kings-Vegas rivalry is going to be a fun one. And same with the Coyotes as well. So before before we get you out of here, JR, as a betting man, should I be betting? Are guys just going to get obliterated every time they go to Vegas now? You got golf there, too, but it could get pretty ugly there, huh?
Listen, if Vegas opened up in 1990, 91, then it would be a huge problem.
A lot of fun, a problem, but a lot of fun as well, right?
Beer in the back of planes. Now it's X Games and protein shakes. You know, it's, you know, the video games and protein shakes. It's a different world now out there.
It is, man. It is. I know it is. JR, that's why I love you, man. Because you know you're part of the new world. Still telling it like it is, but you brought it, and not that it matters. But if I had a vote, you're definitely a Hall of Famer, man. You played with a passion that's missed in the game today. It's always a pleasure catching up with you, man.
All right, Gabe. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you being on.
There's JR with us. Jeremy Roenick kicking it with us, man. We're continuing to kick ass with the top flight guest. Warren Sharp joins me next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. We go from one great guest in Jeremy Roenick to another one. We go from JR to Warren Sharp. SharpFootballAnalysis.com's Warren Sharp. Let's cut the small talk so we can talk football. Always a pleasure, Warren. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Looking forward to some games. Some are less meaningful than others, but it should still be a good weekend of football.
You know, I got your email alert, actually, talking about the New England Patriots and how they're going to have to change their approach this week. So before we get to that, let's quickly get through tonight's football game. Not the most glamorous game, but intriguing nevertheless. The Rams have beaten them the last three times that they played. In fact, as we know, Warren, last time they played, Seattle didn't score a touchdown. They were held to a field goal.
No, absolutely. But this is now we've got Goff in the mix here, and Goff is an interesting quarterback. I don't think he's impressed a whole lot of people so far. Certainly not anybody on the other team that he's playing. But here's the thing: this Rams team, even though Goff hasn't looked all that great, who have they played? You know, last week they played the Falcons defense, which is bad, which is porous. They played the Patriots defense the week before that, which ranks 19th in efficiency. You look at some of these teams that they face. Now they're going up against the number 5 rated Seattle Seahawks defense, a defense that obviously lost Earl Thomas and is going to be a little bit more susceptible in some areas, but a defense nevertheless that's coming back home, going up against this weaker pass offense after dealing with obviously what was for them, you know, a difficult loss back in week 9 in Green Bay, where their offense didn't do anything and their defense gave up 38 points to Aaron Rodgers. I expect a very concerted effort here from Seattle, particularly from the defensive side of the ball. The Rams obviously have nothing to lose, but I think Seattle definitely is going to look to try to shut down and take advantage of this youngster.
What do you think of that Rams team total at 10.5? They average 14.9 points per game on the season. I saw a team total at 10.5. It was shaded to the under. It was like minus 130 under 10.5. Any take on the Rams team total tonight?
It's just so low that, you know, any luck play, a fumble that Russell Wilson has in the backfield, if that defensive line of the Rams can get pressure on the offensive line, you know, any type of field position change like that, or, you know, obviously the special teams coach, I believe the special teams coordinator is taking over as the head coach for this game. I mean, you could see some things in the fake punts. You could see different kinds of trick returns and things of that nature. I mean, throw the kitchen sink out at them at this one. There's no clue what the Rams may try to do in the special teams and offensively to try to do things. I think it's far too risky, even though there's a chance. Obviously, it's in the realm of possibilities that LA does nothing offensively and scores 3 points or something like that. I think it's just too difficult to try to say that they can't score 10.5 points and go over that. But it's not something on my list of things that I'd be looking to wager on, but it is I would never be on the under in something like that with a special teams guy with nothing.
Yeah,
to
it's too low.
You know, taking over.
Yeah, I know. It's a good point. You're right. He's not getting the job. I mean, he knows that. So you might as well just roll the dice. And even the total itself, Ward, it was 38 up to 39 right now. And it's one of these deals where it wouldn't surprise me if Seattle won 27-3, but it wouldn't shock me if Seattle won 34-10 as well.
I hear you. There's just a lot of variance when you're talking about the Rams in this spot with this particular quarterback. It's not like it's week 15 and this guy's been playing the whole year. He only has a few games under his belt. He's playing on a short week. He's playing on the road against a good defense. He could throw some pick sixes. He could deliver a bomb over the top and into a displaced Seahawks defense that makes a mistake trying to cover Kenny Britt. There's just a lot of different things that could happen here that, I'm looking at other investment opportunities, but my math certainly made this total a little bit too low. You know, you take into account it's Thursday night and games on Thursday night do tend to go a little bit lower scoring, but the math itself, even if you do that, I think this total is a little bit light, but it's certainly, there's just too much variance for me to feel very confident in anything in this game.
Warren, I'm in a high-stakes fantasy football league. High stakes, but there's thousands of dollars at stake. I'll put it that way. So I've got Tom Brady as my quarterback, but I also have Kirk Cousins. And I like that Kirk Cousins matchup versus Carolina. I like the way that Gruden likes to throw the ball down the field. And we got Brady, but, you know, do you really want to lose money with Brady on the bench? Brady, you know, a lot of people thought Brady wasn't in a good fantasy situation against Baltimore, and he killed them. Now they're going to Denver, and of course, we all remember last year in the playoffs, they were able to frustrate Tom Brady, although the Pats did move the ball in that game, Warren. They just got stalled inside the 10 a couple of times for one reason or another. They couldn't score. They settled for threes, and then they got nothing at the end. You know, when you said the Patriots have to adjust their game plan against Denver, what did you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, here's the fact that I was running some numbers. I tweeted them out about the Ravens' defensive success with Jimmy Smith. As if you guys watched that game, I'm sure you did, but to listeners out there who may not have been focusing, the Ravens lost their best cornerback in the first quarter in that game. And while the Patriots seemed to have steady success throughout the course of the game, a lot of their big stuff was gained because that guy wasn't there, because Jimmy Smith wasn't there. And if you look at the numbers, he's been in and out of the lineup this year, but he's mostly been in. He's missed a few games. They are the number one overall defense. They're allowing only 39% of plays run against the Ravens' defense to be successful this year. 43% against the pass. That's the sixth best. So they're a top five, six defense and number one overall when he's there. When he is not there, they drop all the way down. They're allowing 53% of pass plays to be successful. That's the worst in the NFL. And their number one overall ranking has dropped to number 27 overall in like the four games that he's missed. So he is a massive difference for this team. But a guy like Aqib Talib, for instance, and we're talking about this Denver game, the Denver Broncos, now Talib is going to be there. But when they missed him, they moved from the number one pass defense just down to the number five pass defense. They moved from the number two overall defense to number 16 overall defense. So their pass defense was affected. They obviously have a bad run defense. But that's what I mean when I'm talking about the Patriots game plan here. It's got to be loading up on the run. We already saw a team like the Tennessee Titans able to run the ball a little bit against this defense. They went completely run heavy in that game. And Brady obviously is lacking some weapons. They're trying to get Martellus Bennett down the field a little bit more because the truth of the matter is Rob Gronkowski was their best deep weapon and now he's gone. So they've gotten Chris Hogan. He's been a high hit rate guy down the field, as has Martellus Bennett. But they just are somewhat thin at the wide receiving core, and that's the real big strength of this Broncos defense. The weakness is on the ground. So I could definitely see maybe they start off a little bit with the pass, but I could see a very balanced game plan and a lot of LeGarrette Blount in this game.
You know what? New England lost twice last year there, actually, and I'm not even looking at this, but I remember Brock Osweiler had the comeback win, and then they lost in the playoffs 20-18. You know, the Patriots look good. Bigger game for Denver here, though, Warren. Do you have an opinion on a side in this game?
Yeah, it is a really big game for Denver. The issue with Denver, though, here's the interesting dichotomy in this game. The Patriots are going to try to run the ball, and they're good at stopping the run. The Denver Broncos can't run the ball, and they're bad at stopping the run. And that's a dangerous combination. I do think that this is going to be, because the way to attack the Patriots right now is through the secondary. The Ravens had the better idea, but they went a little bit too pass heavy, which is something they've been doing the last couple weeks. And they got Joe Flacco, a quarterback, not the ideal guy to do do it up in Foxborough. Simeon threw the ball 55 times last week. They only ran, I think, 8 or 9 times in the game. It was ridiculous. I definitely see another, unfortunately for them, a pass-heavy style going up against this Patriots defense, because the Broncos can't run and the Patriots are good at stopping the run. Right now I'm neutral on this game. I don't have a lot on the total itself. I think the total was set maybe a slight bit light, but you take out Gronkowski and that really makes up for that. I think it's going to be a matter of how the Patriots decide to attack them, and if they're successful running the ball, they can really control this tempo, in my view.
Warren, we've got a minute and a half left. The game that everybody's talking about and the quarterbacks that everybody are talking about, Dak Prescott, Tony Romo, Jameis Winston, Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Dallas Cowboys Sunday Night Football. And, you know, Warren, I know, you know, nobody knows the numbers more than you do, but what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense has done during this 5-game win streak is incredible.
Oh, it really is. If you look at who they've done it against as well, I mean, that's really what kind of sets the picture in terms of how strong that they've been defensively. This is a defense right now that is playing at the top of their game. They've done it against a number of very good offenses if you talk about the opponents that they face. But here is the thing. When you look at the rushing efficiency of these teams that they have faced, that's the big concern that I have, because the offensive rushing efficiency of the teams that they've had this success against, you know, the Chiefs, 22nd. You might think the Chiefs with Jamal Charles, but they're actually only 22nd this year. The Seahawks, a little bit banged up, 17th. The Chargers, 23rd. They haven't really beaten a great team with a great run offense. The Saints, to an extent, have a decent run offense, but Ingram was a bit banged up there. I think this Cowboys offense is going to have some success running the ball in this spot against this defense. They're going to have to and could set up the pass. I'm also very concerned when I see so much of the public all over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in this game. It's like 68% right now is coming in on Tampa Bay, grabbing the 7 points. So that's a little bit disheartening if you're looking that direction. But I think it's going to be, rightfully so, flex to prime time, a great game.
Warren Sharp, sharpfootballanalysis.com. Some great insight from Warren. And check out his website. He's on Periscope before the primetime games. Just follow him on Twitter. He's on Periscope. You get the links to his articles, and you can get the links to his picks, even more importantly, as well. Always a pleasure, Warren. Thanks for the time.
All right. Have a great weekend.
There's Warren Sharp with us. Great stuff as always, Warren Sharp. I'll come back with my plays of the day, and we've been smoking this week. It's time for our plays of the day. We've got a tricky board tonight, guys. This is the largest point spread of the year. And if you don't know this, the Rams have beaten the Seahawks the last 3 times they played. They swept them last year. They held them to a field goal earlier this year. But I'm laying the 16. I think this is going to be one of these, you know, 27-0, 27-3, 30-7 type of football games. We're going to lay the points. So we're going to tease it to the under. I think Thomas Rawls is going to go off tonight. I respect the Rams defense, but Seattle's actually running the ball efficiently. They're going to run the ball down their throat tonight. Here's an interesting prop. Total rush yards combined by both teams. I feel like it's a little low at 187.5. We'll go with our traditional long field goal to the over. Hoshka's a great kicker. Rams will take 3 anytime they can get it if they can. And we'll wrap it up with a track meet in Oakland. Knicks, Warriors over the number. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be mine and yours.